WildTalkRadio.com.
The following program is not intended for children. It contains mild language, violence, sexual innuendo, wink, wink, brief nudity, and deals with mature themes that some may find offensive. Parental discretion is advised.
The Wild Talk Radio Network now presents The Evolution in Online Sports Entertainment.
Hey, everybody, this is X-Pac with D-Generation X.
Hey, this is the Rated R Superstar, a.k.a. Adam Copeland, a.k.a. Edge.
This is everyone's favorite wrestler and mine, Rob Van Dam. Listen to me because you are listening to Wrestle Talk Radio.
Wrestle Talk Radio.
Who's ready for story time, baby?
Hosted by Tim Stein.
Best there is, the best there was, or the best there ever will be.
The intern, Kane Kittens.
I am the best in the world at everything I do.
Special guest host this week, local indie wrestler Keishi Matsunaga.
I'm better than you, and you know it.
And the producer, Sir Rockin.
Acknowledge me.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Don't stop listening, or I will find you. I know where you live. I have Google Earth.
WTR Sunday night.
And remember, it's okay to play with yourself. As long as you have an action figure.
Sunday night is upon us. Means it's time for WTR, Sunday Night Wrestle Talk Radio Live, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network, wildtalkradio.com, twitch.tv/WTR Live. I am the producer, Sir Rocket, and joined as always by the intern, King Kittens.
Oh, it's Sunday, isn't it?
It is. Well, why so sad?
Because it's Sunday.
You know what that means.
Yeah, it means work tomorrow, in person.
It means it's time to talk to the one and only, Tim Stein.
That would be me. Hi, everybody. Welcome to WTR Sunday Night. I'm live in Calgary, dramatic pause, Alberta, Canada, paying attention as my country is about to go on meltdown. It's getting pretty wild up here.
How wild?
But they won Olympic gold, right?
No, there's a peaceful protest happening in our nation's capital right now, and the mayor is basically breaking the law under the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which is our Canadian Constitution, and he's about to get the city police of Ottawa to break the law. They are illegally detaining members of the Freedom Convoy. This is all about to turn into Venezuela, Canada up here. It's pretty heavy.
Doesn't sound fun.
It's if you can detach yourself from the whole thing and follow along, it in a very tragic, sad way, it is rather entertaining. So
at least you can see the bright side on it.
No, there is no bright side.
Okay,
I see the entertainment side, but that's not a bright side. This whole thing is exceedingly dark. They've militarized the police and SWAT teams. Are on standby to break up the protest, which is by every account 100% legal, peaceful, and allowed under our Constitution. And what they're protesting, Lindsay, is vaccine mandates. There are members of – she asked in the chat room.
I know. No, your answer made me just go, oh, my God. Okay, continue.
Yeah, there are members of the protest who – agree with getting vaccinated. There are members that disagree with getting vaccinated. So it's not an anti-vaxxer thing. It's having our choices taken away from us as to whether or not, you know, we have our own right to have something put into our bodies as opposed to being coerced and forced to do it. Canadians are losing their jobs because they're not vaccinated. So
It's happened here.
It's just the entire thing is absolutely wild. And what's even wilder, this is like going into the second week of this protest up here. And it has sparked global a global uprising in many, many, many different countries. Like one of the things that's happened is the organizers of the trucker convoy had a GoFundMe account that had raised well over $10 million. Well, at the behest of the Canadian government, GoFundMe shut that down and literally stole the money and initially said they were going to redistribute the donations to charities of their choice. Charities of their choosing. And everybody in Canada said, oh, you're going to do that? Then we're filing chargebacks. And every single chargeback that gets filed is going to cost GoFundMe $25. So GoFundMe came out and said, whoa, 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 hang on. No, no, no. You know what? We'll give you your money back. So that's going on. And then the protesters found this other crowdfunding website called GiveSendGo, I think it's called. And it's a Christian thing, but unlike GoFundMe, it's 100% free. They don't take any money. They run as a charity, and they guaranteed that all funds raised will go to the trucker convoy protest. And within 24 hours, another $3 million has been raised. And so what's going on is basically the citizens of Canada are rising up against the federal government, which is a minority government. I don't know if you guys understand our political system at all or anything like that, but it's based on England's parliament, where you don't vote for the leader, you vote for the member of parliament of that party. And if that party gets enough members elected, then the guy in charge of that party becomes the leader.
Sounds convoluted.
It's a little complicated, and I think it's a little bit BS. But I got so upset the other day that I had to take a break from Twitter just to reset myself. I posted that I'm just so sick of what's going on in this country that I'm now a Western separatist, and that upset a lot of people that follow me. I must have lost about 25 or 30 followers, but with them going, I'm gaining new followers. So, and I haven't been on that Twitter account for pretty much just over a week now. Like I said last Sunday night, I was taking a break from social media. Well, I wasn't really kidding. However, I am keeping one eye on what's going on. So it's not insurrection level yet, but because of what the mayor of Ottawa and the chief of police of Ottawa are doing in forcing the police officers of that wonderful city to do, it's just going to push more and more people, and this is just going to keep escalating, and they don't realize it. They're throwing gas on the fire. So this is absolutely huge. It's very historic. And yeah, Lindsay says in the chat room, don't piss off the truckers. These are not the guys that work for companies like Day and Ross or, Walmart or whatever, driving the semi rigs. These are the guys that are independent contractors that go down into the States, pick up loads of farm fresh produce or manufactured goods, and then come back across the border and distribute it across the country. That's one of the ways we get our stuff is through the truckers. So there's no huge financial levy on it, unlike if we were not attached to the United States. And so, but the other way is by rail and right across the country. Truckers are literally parking at the border, shutting down the border crossings in almost every province in this country. It's spreading. And if the truckers are sitting on their asses at the protest, then we're not getting our fruits and vegetables at the local grocery store restocked, the ones that cannot be grown in greenhouses up here in the wintertime. So, yeah, this is a massive, massive amount of history that we're going through right now. And it's not just Canadian history. This is going to be worldwide in the coming months. And of course, you got conspiracy theorists and everything else like that. People talking about the World Economic Forum and the New World Order and one world government. And one phrase being bandied about is you will own nothing and be happy. And so it's some of it's alarmist and some of it is grounded in reality. And like I said, the entertainment factor is there, but it's like driving past a car accident. You're rubbernecking. You can't help but look at the carnage. I never said it was good entertainment, Rock.
I'm trying to figure out a way to transition out of that, but I...
Well, I can tell you that, as far as I know, Bret Hart is not involved in the protests at all to this point. Nobody really knows what his stance on it is because he's kept silent about it.
Okay.
So that's a start to the transmortification.
I don't think that's a good transition.
It's well, there's no other way of doing it, right?
Sure there is. Hey, Rock, let's get to our contractual obligation for Sundays.
Thanks, intern.
No problem.
That's why he's here. There is a contractual obligation. It's happening in less than 2 weeks now in Saudi Arabia.
In 13 days in Saudi Arabia.
So let's all consider this WTR's elimination preview, okay?
I do have a
question.
We're
not here next week.
I do have a question as far as Goldberg goes. Is this not his final obligated date?
Hopefully.
We got our fingers crossed that he doesn't sign a new one.
Unless he signs a new contract.
Shut up.
Which, you know, they made $1 billion, so who knows?
God, I hope not.
They can afford to bring him back. So, yeah, Goldberg's back. He's back in a title match. He's challenging Roman Reigns for the Universal title.
Yeah, how in the world does that get to happen?
Easy. Goldberg goes, you're paying me money. Saudi Prince want big match. I get in match. And they go, okay.
So the question I ask is, putting Goldberg in championship matches really the best use of his obligations?
Fuck no. Well,
no.
Fuck no.
How would you change it?
Is not use him one of the options?
Let him show up and cut a 2.5 minute promo on a mic for, just spending 2.5 minutes saying absolutely nothing while he talks.
God, you actually want to give him a microphone?
You actually want him to have a title shot?
At least that there's some like engagement on the other side, and you have the chance that he knocks himself out either putting his head into the door before the match or into a pole during the match.
They're called turnbuckle.
He missed it, and then subsequently about killed Taker and Bray Wyatt in two different matches.
Are you allowed to bring that name up anymore? Wow.
I mean, it's history. It is established history. So yeah, we can talk about
you're
it.
You're allowed to mention him. He's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
At least WWE was smart the last time with him. And the last match we saw him in was a no DQ match, which means you could put bells and whistles on it and carry, you know, if it carried out longer than the 2 minutes that a normal Goldberg match lasts, there was some protection. It wasn't him trying to do a 7 minute wrestling match with Bobby Lashley like we saw at SummerSlam, and oh god.
Is there an actual chance they put the belt on Goldberg?
No, you can't end the Roman Reigns streak that they have by putting the belt on Goldberg.
I know,
because we also said there's no way that they can have him take the belt off of the Fiend, and then he did in 2 minutes.
Exactly. It's possible. It's happened.
I don't think they would do it at Elimination Chamber, because even though you still have a little bit of time towards Mania, we know what the big Mania match is. We know what the idea of it is.
But to them,
don't ruin it.
Yeah, this is a Mania match to them, by the way. This is a WrestleMania caliber match.
Because it was supposed to take place at WrestleMania.
Yeah. We were supposed to get it. And then the world shut down and we all went, yay. We don't get to see Roman and Goldberg.
We got Roman and Braun instead.
No, we got Braun and Goldberg. That was worse.
Yeah.
Because Roman's the one who left.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. But no, Goldberg doesn't pick up the win here only because he would have to drop the belt on SmackDown leading up to Mania. And while, I mean, sure, having a title change on, you know, network TV could be a big thing, not on the lead up to Mania.
Imagine Goldberg, Brock, and Roman in a match at WrestleMania?
No, I don't want to.
Come on. Imagine that match.
No, that just gives me stomach cramps.
No, Brock, I don't want to imagine it. You can say it all you want to. You can breed the type of chaos that, you know, you enjoy. But honestly, and I'll ask you this, do you really want to see it?
For the internet's reaction, yes. As a fan.
50-year-old Goldberg, Roman Reigns, who needs a little bit of time off, and then, you know, as we've all agreed, the best version of Brock Lesnar, but still, Brock Lesnar. No.
But why? It's three big guys running at each other, doing moves.
So here's the thing. There's a difference between big guys slapping meat, you know, just two hosses going at it in a big man style match, and then adding Goldberg to it.
It's a big name. They gotta sell tickets.
Yeah, and also, like, we've seen Brock and Goldberg before. What they did at Mania, okay, it was fine after everything that had built up to it, but it's kind of, okay, we've seen it, it's done, it's over. We've seen Brock and Roman many times, especially at Mania. This is, what, their third meeting at Mania?
I think.
Maybe fourth, whatever.
Third.
And it's we've lost count!
And it's like, okay, especially with the new changes, you're like, all right, Roman's working the slower style, he gets to be the hit, whatever. Like, that's all right. The three of them together wouldn't be entertaining. It would be a clusterfuck because Goldberg is very, very limited in what he can do. And I have a feeling WWE, in that instance, would rely on, okay, Roman has about three moves, let's spam those. Brock will throw everyone around in, you know, German suplexes. It would just be 8 minutes of redundancy, and I really don't want that.
Okay. So Goldberg's losing in 13 days. Is that's the general consensus?
Yes, because there's no benefit to him winning. I understand, like, having a big match feel. I understand having, you know, him on the card, and everyone's like, ooh, Goldberg. But at the same time, as we've talked about, unless he has signed a new deal, which we don't know about. And
we're hoping he didn't.
Yeah, I'm kind of, yeah, like Tim, I'm hoping he didn't. This is the contractual obligation. There's a reason why we call it that. There's a reason why, when we see Goldberg, we go, oh, fuck, it's one of the two matches, isn't it?
So, that's the Goldberg situation. Then we have Six Center, but will one Lesnar leave as WWE champion? Because we have the Elimination Chamber match featuring Bobby Lashley defending the title against Brock Lesnar, Seth freaking Rollins, Austin Theory, Riddle, and AJ Styles. Are they actually going to go through with title versus title at WrestleMania?
I have a hard time picturing them actually doing that. I know that they were thinking about it at one point in time. But I just got this feeling that somehow it's going to be like a gang up situation for somebody to eliminate Brock. Bobby retains, so he keeps his title and has his glorious second run. Brock goes over to SmackDown to fight Roman Reigns for the title.
But you have two nights of WrestleMania.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, night one, it'll be the Lita or Ronda Rousey taking on Becky.
But you could have Brock defend the title one night and not actually do title versus title. But you could have Brock Lesnar walk out of the chamber and, you know, defend the belt one night and then challenge for the other the next night. And if night two would be for the WWE title and the Universal title, Brock would have to defend it night one.
Yeah, I just have a hard time seeing even WWE book that.
You say that, Tim. But Goldberg. They're booking Goldberg. Go ahead, Brian.
Just because he's walking into Mania with the Raw title, with the WWE title, doesn't mean he has to defend it on night one. I know that you're saying that could be the plan, but, and I'll stress this could also be creative's way of going, we have no idea what we're going to do with the WWE title at WrestleMania.
You mean like they do for almost every show?
If we have it on Brock and he faces Roman, that takes care of both of our main title matches in one main event. And then that way we can have the other night's main event being, you know, the big caliber women's title match. And there's our two big matches, and then we fill in everything underneath.
But wouldn't you then be devaluing the WWE Championship at that point?
If he's holding both belts, no, you just have one essentially heavyweight champion.
Why would he hold both belts? Are they planning on ending this brand split again anytime soon?
Just because you just because you have one person holding both belts doesn't mean that you're ending a brand split. It could just mean if you have Brock Lesnar, that's a way of getting him to float to either show.
But he's a free agent already. He can float wherever he wants to begin with.
Even with the Raw title, he could still float over to SmackDown and bitch slap a few Usos.
I understand that. I'm just saying, in general, it's much like the women's tag titles. Just because they're on one brand doesn't mean that they're the Raw women's tag team champions. They're just the general one, and they can float between brands as needed, whoever the champion is.
Unlike the men's division, the women's division only has one set of tag titles. So by that very nature, the women's tag champions have to float between brands.
So going back to the title, does Bobby leave the chamber as champion then?
I've given my answer.
No.
Then who? Is it going to be Brock?
If it's not Brock, it's Seth.
You think so?
Either of those two guys, I think, can carry that title out of chamber and towards Mania. If you want to give it to Seth, you know, I hate to say this, the fans are kind of turning him face.
Because he was up against Roman for 3 weeks, I mean.
But even before that, like, this douchey character of, you know, the drip god, after he got out of the stuff with Edge, it's like the fans are kind of gravitating behind him, unless he does something absolutely heelish, you know, taking AJ Styles and, you know, beating him so bad that he bleeds, I don't see the fans, like, turning on him. I see them kind of, like, gravitating towards him. And yeah, the whole thing with Roman got them more in his corner.
Well, you said beating AJ till he bleeds. I just think that he would get a bigger fan pop if he did that.
Now, we'll touch on this later.
No,
I have a point to come back to in terms of the chamber.
What's your point now?
Someone was supposed to be in the match, and I'm wondering who replaced him.
Do you have a theory on that?
That could definitely be who it was. But also, I look at that match, and I'm like, if he was supposed to be in it, he would have died.
Well, yeah.
Between having Bobby and Brock and Riddle alone, yeah, he just would not have made it out.
So the person he's referring to is Shane McMahon, and well, it looks like the money is gone.
There goes the money.
Shane McMahon is being blamed for all the things that happened with the Royal Rumble.
Well, we touched on it, and I wasn't as harsh on the men's Rumble last week as, not as harsh as you were, Brent. But I did say it lacked.
Yeah, it was just missing. So, like, there weren't really surprises. There weren't anything. And Shane came in, you were like, all right. I mean, we heard that his name was involved with it. We're like, okay. Now we're starting to get stories behind the scenes. You're like, oh.
It feels like he's being the fall guy in some manner, and he's also feuding with his father. That plays a lot into it.
I was going to say, I think that's the latter of it.
Yeah,
like, I understand.
Next thing you know, he shows up in April announcing he's purchased Ring of Honor.
I mean, he could. But yeah, it appears the father and son are not on the same page anymore.
Is Vince on the same page with anybody anymore?
Nick Khan.
I mean, yeah. So, should all the blame be put on Shane McMahon's attitude? Or do others deserve blame for Shane no longer being around?
Well, Shane did book three separate things happening at the Royal Rumble that he got away with after wanting to book the entire men's Rumble around himself and be one of the final three left over. He got himself over Riddle in that slap fight. Shouldn't have happened. Should Shane have eliminated anybody? Tough call. I personally, I don't think so. I think he should have just delivered a few of his, patented chain moves and then get eliminated.
I think Shane getting an elimination isn't a bad thing because, I mean, just looking at in-ring, he's been a competitor for at least, 10, 15 23 years? 23?
Even longer than that.
Because 1998.
Yeah.
Okay.
26 years.
24.
Someone will do the math correctly. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's been a minute.
But he's been around for a while. So therefore, like, if Shane eliminates a wrestler, I wouldn't sit there and think it is, like, nonsensical or, like, anything along those lines. Because he's been in matches. He's been a former champion, if I can remember. Not world champion, but at least a champion at some point. That being said, him wanting to go full Edge / Shawn Michaels and being in the position of, like, booking the Rumble to try and do that, that's a bit much.
His cardio wouldn't let him do it anyhow, so we would have never gotten there.
No, he would have blown up coming down the ramp. In fact, he did blow up coming down the ramp. But you can tell what kind of idea it was when both Vince and Brock, so people on both sides of this argument, look at him and go, no. We're just stopping this right off the bat. No. Now, he still got a little bit of a run. That's fine, but the attitude that's being put out there, like, you know, yeah, he's being disagreeing with the agents, with his dad, with competitors in the match, is not a good sign, especially because these are the guys that are going to have to work with him in front of 60,000 people and make it look all right.
So I don't want to defend Shane in this situation, but I'm going to.
Okay.
And I'm going to blame, you know, you've heard the story about the morale being down and not people not being able to talk to Vince lately, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm going to defend that, too.
Okay.
Vince's mom just died, which means Shane's grandmother just died. Mm-hmm. There's probably a lot weighing on the heads about that. Just saying. Which is why...
Don't disagree with that.
When it's like, you can't disagree. Like, there's part of that is probably playing into attitudes and the arguing and stuff like that. There's a bigger picture going on that plays into all that.
Yes. Also, I think something that we need to remember as well is this is long standing between the two of them.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't something that just happened, you know, in the past year. This is stuff that's happened for 20 years.
Oh, yeah. Don't disagree. But I'm just saying there's a lot that with morale and not being able to talk to Vince, because Vince probably doesn't want to talk to many people. Let's be real about that. You know, life happens.
The other problem is, though, is in that instance, there should be proxies that you are able to talk to in that stead. Now, I know in the structure of things, Vince is the head. Everyone else is lower than the shoulders, we'll say.
And you know where the proxy is? At home, because he had a heart issue 6 months ago.
Right, but in this, but I'm saying with Paul gone, the proxy should be, and I think this also plays into the morale issues, John and Bruce. And I don't really think they're open to a lot of things that people will be throwing out there, which just further exacerbates the issues.
And I think maybe some people thought Shane would be the proxy, yet he came in with an attitude and wanted his way.
That's part of the problem, I think, with Shane was, like, if he had come in to play the mediator, and I know that he probably thought, hey, I've got these great ideas.
Which he has in the past. He's put together Rumbles in the past, which is why he came in.
Right. But at the same time, and I'm just going to say it like this, sometimes you have to read the room and realize.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't disagree.
Not in this instance.
Don't disagree at all. But I just want to put out the bigger picture because there's other things beyond World Wrestling Entertainment that happened in the last 3 weeks.
I agree with what you had said to me before, which is this is the instance, I think, where Vince really missed Pat.
Yeah, really that Pat. He was another one, yeah. It felt like Hunter took Pat's role as the guy putting it to put everything together to just sort of be the middleman. Mm-hmm. And Hunter is no longer there. And Talon, we're mentioning that they wish he was.
Which, to be fair, if you read some of the stuff that's come out recently from some of the people who had worked very closely with Hunter in the past year or two, they have nothing but praise for him. Mm-hmm. Especially someone who, you know, has kind of had some vocal opinions about the company that they were let go from. I saw an interview, like, in the last 2 or 3 days where this person could not stop talking about how good Hunter is and how, like, yeah, he's absolutely focused on everyone that he works with. There's no tears. There's no, like, oh, this is his boy. It's like, no, everyone is his boy, and he makes sure everyone looks good. And yet, as we've seen, they have completely dismantled that.
Also, the term let go from WWE probably isn't an actual term when a person probably doesn't actually have a contract. Let's be real.
Fair enough.
Reminds me of that Seinfeld episode where Kramer gets fired by the general manager. And he's sitting across from him and he says, but I don't really actually work here.
Yeah.
He says, I know, that's what makes it so difficult.
But you know what, Rock? Someone is going to sign a contract on Wednesday, apparently.
Ooh, someone's walking through the forbidden door. Ooh.
Just don't challenge the forbidden door or you're going to get a mean text from someone. Someone needs to take his damn Twitter away from him, I swear to God. I've said it before, if he put as much focus into his other properties that he manages, they'd actually be decent and not have to have the first pick in drafts.
So moving on from that, one other topic we need to get into tonight before we get to some all-time greatest is on Monday there was a not-so-rally decision, which was then made on SmackDown. But on Raw, this led to the return of Lita, who, well, made it clear she wants to fight, and she wants to fight Becky Lynch. Becky, Lita, a dream match you actually want to see?
I don't have a problem with Lita coming back and having a match with Becky. I don't see Lita winning. What's wrong with Lita having a few high profile matches?
There's nothing wrong with it, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say in the lead up to Royal Rumble when she came out and she challenged Charlotte and gave her the twist of fate with. Charlotte took like a sack of potatoes. Everyone was talking about, like, ooh, does Lita have that extra run? Ooh, I'd like to see her face so and so and so and so and so and so. Well, this is one of the so and so's, Lita and Becky. And part of this is also kind of playing into, you know, maybe this is something that someone wanted on the card. And if so, this is a match I don't think is a problem. Lita's shown that she can still go a bit in the ring. And Becky is someone that can keep up with her and help her look good. Lita can actually help Becky look good as well.
And Lita has either gotten herself back into ring shape or kept herself in good enough shape. Because aside from a couple of signs of ring rust in the Women's Rumble, she didn't look out of place.
She will have to change her outfit, though, just saying.
Well, those low riders with the singlet, with the unitard underneath, not exactly the same thing she used to come out in, that's for sure.
No, I'm also talking about the top.
Still.
In Saudi, she's not getting away with it.
Oh, no. In Saudi, they'll all be fully covered. That's a given. We don't even need to talk about that.
But, no, just in terms of this, yeah, I don't mind seeing Becky fight Lita because I think it's going to be a good match. Also, I mean, it's going to help set up Mania. And we already know we're getting Ronda and Charlotte, which means Becky can get her chosen contender, probably Bianca, which again will be a good match. And then we'll start working towards the WrestleMania 39 match of Becky and Ronda, which will be then, what, 5 years in the making?
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone is just going to be waiting to see that because, again, just picture another year of those two just sniping each other on social media. It's going to be great.
And if you haven't caught the snipes between those two on like Twitter, I strongly recommend that you follow them both and pay attention because that's some good chirping, as they say in the National Hockey League.
Becky's been involved in a couple of chirp fights between Ronda, which is just ongoing, with Charlotte, which who really knows anymore.
Real, man. It's getting too real, man.
You don't even know anymore. Becky has just taken this persona that she's been working on for years and has just fine-tuned it into being a troll. And then you've got her husband on the other end, which is just doing the same goddamn thing.
And yeah, the fact that the fans are organically turning him good guy, that's a kick. It really is.
Well, and the best thing about his turn is, like, when he did the babyface turn before, it didn't work because it didn't feel like Seth. Seth has always been the cocky son of a bitch. Ever since, you know, The Shield, he was the guy that talked. Dean was the serious one, but could help cut the promo. Roman was the big silent one that would just get in there and kick ass.
Roman was the muscle.
Right. And Seth was the thinker and the cocky guy of the group.
You know, this is going to sound weird, but every now and then The Shield would remind me of the three villains in Superman 2. General Zod, what's her name, and Non. And Seth Rollins was General Zod.
Oh, yes, the memorable threesome of Zod, Non, and what's her name?
Yeah, I can't remember what's her name. And it's not Nod, it's Non. But yeah, every now and then, that for some reason, that comparison fleetingly hits me in the back of the head.
Ursa.
Ursa, that's it. Hey, thank you, Google.
Yep.
Google exactly is Brent's friend. I do recommend trying DuckDuckGo, though, instead of Google.
Google's fast and it works.
Yeah, so does DuckDuckGo, but you don't have targeted results that make them money and doesn't help you very much. So, it's just DuckDuckGo's results are less spammy.
I'm just gonna go.
And
who's the man? Huh? Who's the man?
It's time for another WTR original.
I am the greatest.
All-time greatest.
Well, whoopsie freaking do!
Help us decide what the greatest intro, submission move, or even the greatest title run ever truly is.
I hope I score.
Interact with us in the real-time chat and find out who or what will end up being the all-time greatest.
Stop us now!
Tommy Dreamer takes on Triple H.
Did you get Casey's input for this?
I have a bunch of them, because he gave them to me a couple of weeks ago.
Attaboy, Casey.
When he gave me Rumble picks.
There we go.
Okay.
So, Dreamer and Hunter, Brent.
I feel like we associate Triple H more with a heel. That being said, when Hunter does face shit.
You.
And I'm thinking back to, like, when Hunter was looking for Sean and he was going to, like, you know, the cafeteria counter, or when he's egging Sean on by saying that they, you know, oh, they don't think you're controversial enough. And Sean's going around, you know, super kicking Stan and all of that. He's fucking hysterical.
Well, that's when they're doing their face turn DX gimmick, but that's only with Sean and never on his own.
But I'm also, but don't forget also when he did, you know, when he was with the family taking on Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Again, very good run. Dreamer is Dreamer is like the prototypical babyface. Like the guy who's always getting his ass handed to him. The one, you know, he was going up against the perennial evil of Raven.
You're basically equating Tommy Dreamer as the everyman.
Yeah, he very much was. And there was a reason why he said at one point he never wanted to win the world title. Because in his mind, being the kind of babyface in the role that he was, he shouldn't win the title. It should always be about the chase. It should always be, you know, the guy fighting to get there, but possibly, you know, just coming up short, or the heel just doing enough just to win to, like, further cement him. Ah, this one's tough. In this instance, I guess I'll go Dreamer as a babyface more than Hunter.
Tim?
Yeah, the only absolute bang-on goofy good guy shit that Triple H ever did was doing the DX gimmick second go-round, or was it the third by this point, with Shawn. Every other time he's played face, he hasn't really played face. He's just played opposite his opponent's heel persona. And it's my opinion that Triple H is not the star of the show, but a member of an ensemble when he's the good guy. And it's, in a lot of cases, in practically every case, it can't last for that long because it just doesn't have that growth that other monster faces has. I interjected, Brent, when you were talking Tommy Dreamer, and I basically accused you of basically equating Tommy Dreamer to, quote unquote, everyman, all one word. And, that was exactly my assessment when I first saw this matchup at WrestleTalkRadio.com, by the way. If you go there, you'll be redirected to Challenge and you'll see the babyface matchups and you can follow along that way if you want. But, when I saw, I'm thinking, well, Tommy Dreamer, he's the everyman. And, if you're going to have the babyface, you kind of want him to be quintessential. And that's what Tommy Dreamer is when he's on a face turn. And no, my vote is Tommy Dreamer.
The babyface of ECW, Keishi, Tommy Dreamer.
It's unanimous.
The Steiner brothers, Chris Jericho, Tim.
Oh, God. Chris Jericho is a babyface. He falls into that same category as the guys that I mentioned previous episodes, where is he really a babyface or is he just like that other side of the same coin? Because you stop and you think about it. Entertaining as hell. Babyface? Ugh. It's really difficult to categorize him that way when you see his character the way you've seen. Like, I think one of the guys I pointed out like this was what? Stone Cold was one of them. Who else? This was a while back now. But who else did I label as one of those guys?
I don't remember at this point. Just keep going.
But it was Stone Cold, and I think I also threw Undertaker into that role as well as a few others. It's the same guy that you cheer is the same guy that you boo, and the only real major difference is nuance. And Chris, when he's whether he's trolling the crowd or egging them on or letting them egg him on, has got to be one of the most entertaining SOBs in professional wrestling, period. The Steiner brothers as a tag team, a little bit generic for my taste. As far as tag team goes, don't get me wrong, I've never hated the Steiner brothers. They put on good quality, solid matches. I think they were better off once they split up, to tell you the truth. Depending on who else would have gone up against Jericho, I gotta pick Chris.
Right.
All right. I'm basing this on the Steiner brothers before the NWO, because that's when you started to see the kind of change in Scott, and he became, the ultimate, douche bra, is the best way to describe him. And, before Rick decided that he was going to have a really horrible promo with Chucky. But
Scott is mathematical genius. Wow.
But back in those, mid to early 90s, when you had the Steiners, and, they'd come out in their Michigan jackets and Rick would have his headgear. Those guys were fucking over. And they could work well. But it was always like, you had your two prototypicals. Scott was more, your faster paced guy. He could kind of, get up in the air. He could do the Frankensteiner. But he was still built like a brick shithouse. He was still bigger than like half the people on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick was your powerhouse. But, they'd get in a match and it was like, if they were facing fans were just cheering them both. So there wasn't the heel. Mm-hmm. Or if they faced, the Road Warriors, everyone watched and everyone cheered. But you still had, like, when the Steiner brothers faced Doom, it was an absolute, like, Steiners are the good guys. Doom can go to hell. Chris is very much in the same guys as Triple H. When he's the cocky guy. And it's just like, even when he had his face moments, it didn't feel face-ish. It felt more like it does today, where it's like, I'm a heel, but I'm going to pander to the crowd. And especially, like, I can't buy him as a babyface when he's supposed to be heel, and yet he's sitting there, like, adoringly looking at the fans to sing his song. And it's like, no. If anything, Chris should be like, you know, as soon as they start singing, it's like, cut the music. No, you people don't get that. But he wants to play both sides, and I feel like it negates both sides of him being a heel and a babyface and being just kind of there. So in terms of that, I've got to go in terms of, or for babyface with the Steiner brothers.
So 1-1.
Yep. It's on to Casey.
Jericho, Steiners were a great tag team, but nothing they did as faces really stands out against Jericho.
Great minds think alike.
Okay, here. Give me a quintessential Chris Jericho babyface moment. Go.
Stephanie's a hoe.
Oh, good. Him.
Dirty trash bag hoe. What else did he call it?
So I can understand why the two Canadians voted against babyface Steiners, because they were the All-Americans.
Okay, don't make this a national thing, because we didn't, and we weren't.
But it fits. Anyway.
And you're a Turk.
They're all American boys.
It's amazing you don't live in Carolina. You're such a bunch of jerk.
Christian.
Only hockey fans will get that reference.
Christian takes on Jungle Boy. Brent.
Jungle Boy. Not even thinking about it. Jungle Boy is the ultimate babyface. Christian, again, he has babyface moments, but more times than not, even though he has his peeps, again, he just feels on the outskirts. He doesn't feel like a babyface. Whereas if you say Jungle Boy is absolutely a babyface. The second they turn him heel, I think everyone's going to go, wait, what the fuck?
Okay. It's one for Jungle Boy. Casey goes Christian. Jungle Boy will be a great babyface. Just needs more time. So to break the tie, we go to Tim.
Well, my problem is Christian as a babyface lands in the same ballpark as Triple H as a babyface, in that both of them, their best babyface moments are with their tag partners. With Christian, his best babyface moments were with Edge. 5 second pose.
I was gonna go with Kazoos.
So
they were still heel moments too, by the way.
They had heel moments and babyface moments doing both, but at the end of the day, even when they were doing heel with the poses and Kazoos and shit, they still got the face pop as heels because the crowd just really dug them. And it's really tough. Jungle Boy hasn't been around long enough. But yeah, he's always, you know, he's like, sometimes he's the ultimate underdog. I'm going to have to go with Christian just because he's more established. If both of these guys had been around for the same length of time, I probably would have gone Jungle Boy.
And thus, I can't wait for Christian to turn on Jungle Boy. And, because it's probably coming.
And finally, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, and Christian turning on Jungle Boy will probably put Jungle Boy through the roof. Into the stratosphere.
I wouldn't go that far. Finally.
Okay, almost stratosphere.
Bayley takes on Daniel Bryan.
God damn it.
So let's go to Mr. Goddamn it first.
I went first last time.
No,
I went first
no,
last time.
You spoke up. Go.
God. I thought you knew how this game was played by now, bro.
I know. No, the hardest thing about this is both of them, when they do babyface, like when Daniel was absolutely the yes movement, and, you know, just starting out as, you know, coming back to fight with Team WWE versus the Nexus, it's that, you know, he is the prototypical underdog. Hell, he fought through the entire fucking Authority to win the title and have probably the best WrestleMania moment of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Bayley, when she first came up, was, again, your perfect prototypical babyface. She had the side ponytail. She was the, you know, they looked like they plucked it. And I mean, I know she was probably in her 20s, but like an 18-year-old girl out of the crowd and just had her walk down the ramp and get in the ring and could do moves. That was the whole thing with Bayley. I mean, hell, her number one fan got over herself just, you know, embracing the Baileyism. And then they both turned heel and were so good at it, too. God, this one is so hard because it's just the male and female equivalent of each other. If I have to choose, which I do.
Would you do?
I know this is the whole thing. This is the great debate. I have to pick one of them.
It's not the greater than great debate.
It's the all-time greatest. Get it right.
It's the all-time greatest.
Sorry, I'm involved in too many tournaments.
Greater than great debate is Saturday nights on CB Radio. Midnight-ish are as close as they get to one.
Greater than great debate.
Yes, and last night was South Park characters.
It was.
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
But in choosing one, I'll go with Daniel, only because he has, like I said, the absolute, probably best babyface moment of all time. And going into WrestleMania 30, with the build-up of the Yes Movement, with the moment in Seattle where he turned on Bray, which was probably too early, but he turned on Bray and got that entire arena. The thing also about Daniel Bryan is the fact that he was over so much as a babyface that his chant permeated pop culture. You were having
second most popular chant right after what?
But I mean, like, you had people doing the Yes chants at football stadiums, at baseball stadiums, you know, hockey arenas. They were all doing the Yes chant because it was so over and it got out of wrestling and became its own instance.
Mainstream GIF on Twitter.
And I mean, even still, people are using the saying when he traveled to another company. He's not doing it, but everyone is doing it for him. So in that instance, I've got to go Daniel.
Tim?
Yeah, well, like I said, that Yes chant is the second biggest chant to come out of WWE as a crossover after Steve Austin's what? Like, it wound up showing up everywhere. You mentioned hockey games. Yeah, football games. Just about everywhere. Just about everything. The Yes chant is, it's got to be the second biggest chant to come out of WWE. Daniel Bryan, basically most of his babyface run, originally was the ultimate underdog, which led to him winning, over the Authority. Would you not agree, Brent?
Uh-huh.
You already did.
Yep.
But, yes. Is what you were supposed to do. Anyway, I set you up and you didn't knock him down. Anyway, Bayley coming out is the ultimate baby face for the female audience. Little girls have so few role models to be able to look up to in comparison to little boys. It's just a sad fact of life. I'm not saying it's a good thing, because it definitely isn't. But her biggest pops were from the little girls. And everybody loved babyface Bayley. There was nothing about her that rubbed anybody the wrong way.
Unless you were Alexa Bliss.
What?
Unless you were Alexa Bliss.
But we're not talking about Alexa Bliss. We're talking about Bayley's fans.
You said it didn't rub anyone the wrong way. I was just pointing
out. Well, when I say that, you don't count your coworkers. Oh my God. Anyway. I mean, on the strength of that, you would want to have to go with Bayley. But this is where the rub is. The ultimate underdog, Daniel Bryan, had everybody behind him equally and just as forcefully. Like, Bayley had the majority of the crowd behind her every time she came out, but not as forcefully. One of the things weighing in Daniel Bryan's favor over Bayley is that damn Yes chant that's still going on, even though he's not doing it. Copyright, trademark, whatever. Bayley didn't really have anything like that.
I would disagree. I would say Brooklyn SummerSlam weekend.
Not as prevalent. My point is not as prevalent or predominant as Bryan Danielson's Yes chant. Okay. What was Bayley's biggest moment?
Brooklyn.
Face Bayley.
Bayley Sasha.
Yeah, face Bayley beating Sasha. And that was absolutely wonderful. Thing about it was, yeah, sure, Sasha going in playing the heel, Bayley going in as the face. The crowd was behind both of them. Daniel Bryan overcoming all the odds and challenges and winning that strap for the first time ever. You had Batista and you had Triple H, and everything leading up to that was a beatdown on his character. Didn't Stephanie at one point in time say that he was a great B star?
B plus player.
Yeah, B plus player. But he's not an A plus player like Triple H. And the nature of Stephanie as a heel, the nature of Triple H as a heel, the nature of Batista as a heel makes you love to absolutely hate the living shit out of all three of them. They do damn good jobs as heels. And the atmosphere at that Mania when Bryan is taking on the establishment, the authority, and actually getting over and winning that title, for the fans, unbelievable, unattainable dream come true.
So, Bryan.
It's a lot like Eddie beating Brock for the title way back when, but on a bigger scale than that.
So, Bryan.
I love Bayley. I got to go Daniel.
Daniel Bryan. Bryan's Mania run was a true underdog tale, and his return to wrestling sets him apart from Bayley. There you go.
So, like, we're unanimous and shit like that.
Yeah. So that's the show.
And I just dug that Casey basically said exactly what I said, but in a lot fewer words.
Yeah, a lot fewer.
A lot fewer. You're telling me to talk too much. Fine. I'm going to go then. Everybody, that's Wrestle Talk Radio WTR Sunday night for tonight. Those of you tuned in live, thank you very much. As always, we appreciate you. Those of you listening to the archive a day or five or whatever later, we appreciate you as well very much. And thank you very much for downloading the podcast of this live webcast. Of course, available basically all over the internet. I mean, Spotify, Amazon, iTunes,
Stitcher.
Yeah, I forgot about Stitcher. Holy shit! Like, yeah, we're pretty much just about anywhere you get your podcast downloads. So if you ever can't catch us live, you can catch up by checking out WTR Live on your favorite podcast streaming company. That being said, tomorrow, immediately following Rock, why don't you take Lindsay in tow and talk about it?
This is Monday. We're actually going to be live for the Raw Post Show, 11 p.m. Eastern.
And, yeah, you know, if you're not busy on Thursday night, 10 o'clock Eastern, why don't you join the award-winning Lindsay Ward for another edition of the award-winning Rack Radio Show.
The Rack will be live Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, talking NXT news notes and some sort of tier list that we're coming up with. It's The Rack Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. It's Rack Radio Show on all social media platforms.
But wait, Rock, there's more. Why don't you play video games on twitch.tv/WTR Live throughout the week?
We do Saturday nights, Fortnite with friends, right before CB Radio, which is a midnight-ish Eastern, CBRadioLive.com, GreaterThanGreatDebate.com. Last night, as Brent mentioned earlier, we did South Park characters. What we're doing this week, Brent's going to hate, so check it out, CBRadioLive.com.
You know, one thing I miss is we stopped doing Cards Against Humanity right after I actually started getting into it on a regular basis.
Cool.
But you said they changed it around so we don't do it no more.
Yeah.
That sucks. Tell them to change it back. But in the meantime, Saturday nights, we talked about this before, midnight-ish or close so you get to it. another edition of Wild, Wacky, Unusual, Weird, Different, Totally Strange TV Radio, the home of the Greater Than Great Debate.
Yeah, all right, plugged it. Keep going.
What?
I already plugged it. Keep going.
Well, isn't the Stupid Bowl next Sunday night?
And the Super Bowl is next Sunday night, so there is no WTR Sunday night, which is why I said earlier, this was your Elimination Chamber preview show.
So, there you go. Just so you know, everybody. That being said, because we're not going to be live on the air next Sunday night, I'm going to wish Sheila a very happy birthday a week early. Her birthday is next Sunday on the Super Bowl. So, Rock, say happy birthday, Sheila, in advance.
Happy birthday, Sheila, in advance.
Right? You should do the same thing.
Happy birthday, Sheila, in advance.
And I know that Casey would say the same thing if he was told to write it down and message Rock about it. So, there you go. 1 week ahead of schedule. Because we won't be around next Sunday. That being said, hey, Rock, social media.
At Wild Talk Radio on Twitter, Facebook.com/Wild Talk Radio Network. It's WTR Sunday on the Facebook and the Twitters.
Brent, you're on Twitters.
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at King Kittens and Rock. I already saw what the thing is, and you're right, I am going to hate.
Alrighty then. Of course, you can follow our professional wrestling buddy, sometime part-time co-host, Keishi Matsunaga, at Kyle Driver. That's Pile Driver, but with a K on Twitter. So do that. I'm not going to promote a Twitter handle because I'm still taking a break from Twitter for a little bit.
It's at Flame Swervers. By the way, you can go right now to YouTube.com, search Linz Wood, or go to linzwood.rockradioshow.com and subscribe to the channel, Tim.
Hey, can I follow Lindsay Ward on Twitter?
Yeah, at Linz Ward. You can also go to YouTube, search Linz Ward, or linzwood.rockradioshow.com. She streams Genshin Impacts Monday through Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Check it out.
How do you know I'm not subscribed?
Because I know, Tim.
You don't know all of my Google logins.
Subscribe to the channel.
Just subscribe to Lindsay's channel. All right, everybody. Have yourselves a great 2 weeks. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Rock, who you got?
We'll tell you about it later in the week.
No, you don't know yet.
We're doing a Super Bowl Saturday, a show Saturday, so we're gonna, you know.
But you can mention the team you're leaning on towards.
We'll see you all week long along there with the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Bye.
WildTalkRadio.com.